The government, free speech, and the internet are, again, topics at the Supreme Court today. What is allowable for the government to do under the banner of fighting misinformation online? Does asking social media companies to take down lies cross a line? Questions at stake in the latest case this term on free speech in the internet age. Emily Bazelon, staff writer at the New York Times Magazine and fellow at Yale Law School, is here to help us. Emily, hi.
Hi, Robin.
And as you know, the court is looking at whether the Biden administration violated the First Amendment during the pandemic when it called on internet platforms to take down misinformation, primarily about vaccines, but other things as well. Tell us first a little of what the government did and how they're defending doing that.
The government was trying to tell social media companies about its concerns about misinformation. And I'm sure you remember this, during the coronavirus, there was lots of misinformation about, for example, false claims that vaccines were harming people. And the government saw a real threat to public health. They were also concerned about misinformation related to the 2020 election. And so they were trying to alert social media companies to lots of posts swirling around that had a lot of false claims in them.
Well, the plaintiffs in this case, the states of Missouri and Louisiana, and a number of vaccine opponents, who were all banned from some platforms during the pandemic, and Louisiana's Solicitor General Benjamin Aguinaga arguing against the Biden administration for them. Justice Elena Kagan asked him this hypothetical.
Some part of the government, let's call it part of the law enforcement arm of the government, says you might not realize it, but you are hosting a lot of terrorist speech, which is going to increase the chances that there's going to be some terrible harm that's going to take place. And we want to give you this information. We want to try to persuade you to take it down. The government can't do that?
The government can absolutely do that, Justice Kagan.
So the question is, how does he then square that with also saying that the government can't ask platforms to stop disinformation that may be deadly about vaccines?
Yeah, I mean, that moment really exposes a problem with this case, which is, where is the line between telling the social media platforms about a threat and trying to persuade them to do something about it versus coercing them? And if there's a lot of room for alerting and telling and persuading, then it's not really clear what facts here actually cross that line on the part of the government.
I think you may hear that also in this next sound that we have from Justice Samuel Alito. He said this about some of the email exchanges between the government and the social media companies. Let's listen.
This constant pestering of Facebook and some of the other platforms, and they want to have regular meetings, and they suggest, they suggest rules that should be applied, and why don't you tell us everything that you're going to do so we can help you and we can look it over. And I thought, wow, I cannot imagine federal officials taking that approach to the print media.
And Emily, you might be thinking government officials might try to influence reporting, that persuasion that you spoke about. But there's a big difference between journalists putting out a paper and Twitter, which is written by millions of people. So what is your sense of how the justices are viewing this case overall? And by the way, is that part of what the government is saying in its defense, that there is a big difference?
Yeah, I mean, the government is saying, look, we do actually try to persuade print journalists all the time of our point of view. You know, one example is if my employer, the New York Times, has something it wants to publish that has sensitive national security information in it, the government will absolutely sit down with the editors and say, please don't publish that. So I think the distinction Alito was making here, it's not one that really seems to add up in practice. And again, this was just a problem for the plaintiff's case today. They're trying to really stop the government from expressing any kind of point of view to the social media platforms. And it's just not clear how that squares with government speech in lots of other contexts.
Yeah. And we just want to get to this. The court is hearing another case today about the First Amendment, and this one about the National Rifle Association. Briefly remind us of that case.
Yeah, this is related because it's also about what the government can say to ask other people to do things. In this case, a state official in New York was trying to encourage companies to stop doing business with the National Rifle Association after the 2018 school shootings in Parkland, Florida. And so this official was saying, hey, to banks and insurance companies, maybe you should reconsider whether you want to do business with the NRA. The Court of Appeals found in New York's favor. Those judges said that while it's true that government officials can't use their regulatory powers to coerce individuals, they have a duty to address issues of public concern. And they said that in this case, this state official was just writing even-handed, non-threatening messages. Those are the words of the appeals court. Yeah.
And just briefly, your colleague Adam Liptak at the New York Times did the math and says the Supreme Court has never before considered as many cases in one term on what the Constitution has to say about free speech in the internet era, which did not exist when the Constitution was written. How important is this term?
It's crucial. I mean, there are five cases that Adam is including there. And they're really, the court is poised to shape the whole law around how we think about free speech vis-a-vis the social media platforms. The kind of basic problem here is discomfort with the government regulating or, you know, worse, censoring speech on the platforms, but also a sense that these platforms have become hugely powerful as vehicles for speech and exactly what should the rules be and who should make them.
Well, there are things that right now I cannot say on the radio, so 'twas always thus, perhaps. Emily Bazelon, staff writer at the New York Times Magazine and fellow at Yale Law School, thank you.
Thanks so much.